Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hello, and welcome to Baker McKenzie Global TMT podcast series. This episode is entitled Artificial Intelligence and More in North America. My name is Raffaele Giarda. I am a partner with Baker McKenzie based in Rome, and I lead the technology, media, and telecoms, or as it is often referred to, TMT, Global Industry Group of the firm. Today, I have the great pleasure of discussing around artificial intelligence and machine learning developments as they unfold in North America with two distinguished guests from our TMT group. Bradford Newman, who is a litigation partner resident in Baker McKenzie's Palo Alto office and chair of the North America Trade Secrets Practice. Brad regularly serves as lead trial counsel in large cases and has successfully litigated a broad spectrum of trade secrets cases in state and federal courts throughout the United States. Brad specializes in matters related to trade secrets, artificial intelligence, decentralized finance, smart contracts, blockchain, and cryptocurrency. And Brad is also the chair of the AI subcommittee of the American Bar Association. Marcela Robledo, who is a partner in our San Francisco office. Marcela has significant experience handling all intellectual property, data, and technology aspects in a wide range of corporate and transactional matters, including mergers and acquisitions, licensing, collaboration agreements, and joint ventures. Marcela has practiced law in the United States and in Colombia. Marcela is also a member of the American and California Bar Associations, as well as the International Trademark Association and the Hispanic National Bar Association. So thank you very much, Brad and Marcela, for being with us today. And first, let me say that I hope that yourself and all those dear to you are well and safe in these complex times. And the same I wish for all those listening to our discussion today, especially considering that a new year has just started. And when we say a new year, just for the records, today is the 10th of January, 2022, when we are having this conversation with our two friends around artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here. And look forward to talking with you and Marcela about AI and machine learning and what's happening in North America.
Yeah, thanks, Rafael. It's exciting to be here.
Thank you very much to both of you. So let me start with the first question for Brad, if possible. In North America in 2022, where are the regulators seemingly most focused on in terms of artificial intelligence use cases? Is there any particular item or any particular development that you have seen around this, Brad?
Yeah, that's a great question, because unlike the EU and Brussels and, you know, sort of the AI directive that is meant to serve as a guidepost to all of those in the EU, in the United States, the answer to your question is that there is regulatory action around one specific aspect of AI, and that is AI in recruiting and hiring. And there are a number of states in the United States that have passed regulation and have pending regulation around that, rather than a federal approach. So the United States, the regulatory action is starting with the states, which means there are different rules depending on where you are. There will not be federal legislation for some time, I don't believe. So what do we have right now? We have New York City that in November, actually exactly 2 months ago, November 10th, 2021, they passed a bill that requires hiring vendors to conduct annual bias audits of artificial intelligence used in the city's processes and tools. So what does that mean? It means companies using AI-generated resources need to be responsible for, one, disclosing to job applicants how the technology was used in the hiring process. Two, they must allow candidates options for alternative approaches, such as having a human being conduct the interview instead of the AI. And there are fines and bias testing requirements as well. Now, New York City's not alone. Illinois in 2019 passed the Artificial Intelligence Video Interview Act. And that one requires employers to disclose when AI is used in a video interview and also allows applicants to have the option to have their data deleted. And then Maryland passed a law which prohibits the use of facial recognition during pre-employment interviews unless and until the employer receives consent. And of course, my home state, California, regulates everything. So there's a bill pending called the Talent Equity for Competitive Hiring Act. And in the time we have, I'll just tell you it's similar to the New York City bill. It requires disclosure. It requires bias testing and such. And so really, coming full circle, in the United States, the hiring aspects touch on a lot of the issues that matter and sort of resonate and are familiar with you folks in the EU. It's about privacy, transparency, disclosure, and fairness. And so in the employment arena, that's where you're seeing regulatory action. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that on the federal level, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, more often referred to as the EEOC, which is a federal regulatory agency, is also looking to regulate and enforce the Title VII laws against discrimination in this area. And there's been quite a lot of action, and there will continue to be. However, the EEOC cannot make law. It can only enforce the laws it's charged with enforcing. And so that's going to be much more enforcement than legal law creation. So hopefully that gives you a lay of what's happening right now in the United States around regulating AI and machine learning.
This is extremely interesting, Brad. And I think it also draws an interesting parallel between what's happening in the US on the one end, and also, as you mentioned, you touched upon at the beginning, in other places of the world like the European Union. So thank you very much for that oversight. If I can stay on that topic for a second more, when it comes to AI governance and oversight, what do you think are companies mostly looking for? What do you think are they most in need of?
Yeah, that's a great question too, because although I focused on what's happening right now with regulation in AI hiring tools, there is a lot going on in Congress, a lot going on in the political arena, the lobbying arena, and other industries that use AI and ML. And eventually, there will be regulation in governing all sorts of areas like autonomous driving and anything you can think of that uses AI and ML and it touches the consumer. And so what companies need to be doing now, even in the absence of regulation that directly touches upon their AI and ML products and processes, is put in place corporate oversight through internal guidelines that includes buy-in from legal and HR, as well as the data scientists, for overseeing and documenting the entire AI ML product lifecycle to ensure it's explainable, fair and unbiased, repeatable, documented, and tested, which together are often many of the components that are used to describe, quote, ethical AI. And you really have some push-pull between the data scientists and the folks making the product, so to speak, who are asked to, quote, build it. Can you do this? Can you build it? And data scientists are trained to say, yes, we can. Here's how we'll do it, or no, we can't. What they're not always trained to do is to realize and ponder and modulate the ethical aspects of it. They're the ones that tell you it can be built or not the ones that tell you whether there might be bias, whether or not it's been tested and audited once it's been deployed. And HR, legal, and other functions of the company need a seat at the table. And we've worked on with companies throughout industry, including TMT, developing specifically internal AI governance guidelines and protocols that we can tailor for the company and that are designed to both make sure the company's doing the right thing with AI and ML, and to frankly protect them from charges in America by the plaintiff's bar and regulators should they come knocking, and to be able to say, we are doing the right thing and let us show you how.
And Rafael, if I could interject on that point, because I think it's a really interesting point, because I look at all types of companies all the time because I do quite a bit of M&A, and all companies have confidentiality policies, security policies, data policies, but general data policies, right? Or even policies on use of confidential information, right? But nobody really has, or very, very, very few companies have policies on use of AI, or even further than that, like biases and how to handle AI against managing and balancing the ethical issues and discrimination and the like in the use of AI. So Brad's point is actually really, really, really relevant, because it's something that we're going to see more and more going forward, and companies really need to step up.
And Marcella, thank you for jumping in, because you make that great point and sparked something that I should have brought up. Actually, two points. One is, with a focus on ESG in major corporations, the employee base and the plaintiff's lawyers looking in from the outside are going to be focused on companies, and you can think of some in your head, that control the data, that train AI. And so in this moment we're living in, how a company governs its AI usage is going to be key. And then the last point I wanted to bring up is, for many, many years, and I Googled it, and I think it's one of the first uses ever. I think there was some obscure use of it years earlier, but I have been writing and publishing about the need for a chief AI officer in companies that really have AI ML as their chief products or use it as an integral part of their operations. We have a C-suite filled with CFOs, COOs, CISOs, chief security officers, etc. You need, in today's world, a chief AI officer at the C-suite level or near C-suite level who has ultimate corporate responsibility for monitoring, oversight, and internal reporting around how the company does the things we're talking about today. And we have helped companies establish that function repeatedly. And I think we're going to see more of a chief AI officer.
That's terrific, Brad and Marcella. And I think it does shed a light, which is very important, on where the priorities of companies are right now. And if we can continue on that tone, at the same time, perhaps shifting gears from policy matters to what happens when players interact one with the other. When companies are negotiating contracts with AI vendors, what do you think are some of the most important provisions that they look for?
You know, this is really Marcella's area, because she is one of the leading folks out there today drafting, creating, advising on these areas. I would just say, from a litigation standpoint, there are two clear areas, and I'm sure Marcella can expand and identify more, but the two areas are indemnification when you're using an AI vendor, who is responsible for what amongst and between the consumer of the AI and the seller of the AI. But the second one, and this really shifts into other areas as well as TMT, like healthcare, you know, who owns the data once you're up and running? A lot of algorithms are trained on third-party licensed data sets, and then they're adjusted and they're They're modulated and they go live. And now you've got new data being created through the AI/ML process. And you must, if you're using a third-party vendor to initially source the data on which the algorithm is trained, have a provision that provides for who owns the data as time progresses and the algorithm's working and what uses can be made of that data. But, you know, Marcella, you're the expert in this area, so help us.
Thanks, Brad. And I mean, I completely agree with you. The ownership of the data is key. But also, I mean, you talked about these third-party data sets that you take and incorporate into your algorithm. I mean, just there's a whole level of issues in connection with that, because first of all, are you getting those data sets with enough permits with the scope of use that allows you to actually use those in your algorithm, and then for other data analytics that you're doing in connection with that data? Are you getting it with any limitations? And often you see, okay, the data set is only for, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, 1 year. And the problem with these AI models is that you really need to have the data in there forever, because otherwise the model doesn't work, right? And so when you have limitations about having to remove data from the algorithm, it puts in jeopardy the entire model. So you really have to be careful about that. You have to be careful on whether the data if there's any other limitations. I mean, not only time barred limitations, but also if there's data subject requests, like if it's personal information, there's a host of privacy issues related to the data. And if it's biometrics data, there's a lot of rules related to that. If it's data that is subject to user requests, where a user actually has the right to request deletion of that data, that can be significant for algorithms and models that depend on that data. As Brad mentioned, indemnities. Who is ultimately responsible if there's any liability related to this data? If there's an injury, if there's a breach, in particular, if there's a breach, right? You have to figure out who is responsible for actually doing the notifications to all the relevant people involved. And so there's many different issues that you have to take into account. And one piece is the licensing of the data sets, but then the other piece is if you're actually making those data sets or the models, the ultimate models, available to third parties, right? That outbound licensing of the model, there's issues there too. And as Brad mentioned, one of those was the IP ownership. But the other thing is, who is ultimately responsible for all of that? And so you really have to look at all of these contracts holistically and really look at all IP, the data, the privacy, the consumer protection issues, the bias issues and the ethical issues involved in them. You really have to look at all of this at a global level.
And that makes a whole lot of sense, Marcella. Thank you very much for that overview, which I think gives us the message that when in drafting contracts, the importance of the provisions is on the, I would say, natural life of the contract, as well as if anything goes wrong or not in the direction that the parties had initially projected. And that is where the drafting of contracts by experts like you and like Brad make the contract an invaluable tool for the parties to do business. So thank you very much for that. Marcella, if I can close off with a last question for you, which is around some of the AI trends that we're seeing in the mergers and acquisition space. So we said at the beginning that you are an expert in this area, and it would be fantastic to know what you are seeing in this space with respect to the AI transactions that may be going on.
Yeah, so it's interesting because the M&A space has had a significant amount of growth in the past year and a half, and all of the trends point towards an increase in that space. And artificial intelligence in particular has been a huge part of that, because there's not only many more companies right now that do artificial intelligence, whether it's their main product or their main service, but also or whether it's ancillary to some of their other goods or services. And so AI companies in particular, but also just AI in general, is poised to grow. I mean, that industry experts are saying that in the past few years, there's AI companies have $166 billion in value. And those companies have realized that value either through M&A or through IPOs. A lot of them have been through IPOs. I mean, the growth of public, initial public offerings has been exponential in the past year or so. And that's expected to continue in the new year. The other interesting thing is that artificial intelligence is being used more and more in connection with doing the M&A. And so there's a lot of tools right now that help in analyzing companies and doing in analyzing the models and doing due diligence. And that trend in particular will continue going forward. And so it's interesting because I'm actually working with a company who's looking into using artificial intelligence to review contracts and due diligence for M&A prospects. And I think we're going to see more and more of that going forward. And so it's really interesting to see how, and will be interesting to see how that will continue into 2022.
Wonderful, Marcela. Thank you. So AI not only as a driver for increased M&A activity, but also as a tool to facilitate the activity that is around deals and transactions that may happen in that space. So thank you very, very much. All right, Brad, Marcela, this is really fantastic. I would love to spend much more time with both of you, but we are time pressed, and it seems clear from this conversation how an economy that is so significantly based on data and artificial intelligence and machine learning processes, so much relying on massive amounts of information, cannot be separated from the ethical aspects and, you know, principled, fair, unbiased, and tested protocols. So the impression everyone can probably gather from this very interesting conversation is that AI makes the role of technology, media, and telecoms players even more fundamental in the current business environment and in the communities we work and we live in. So thanks again to Brad Newman, partner with Baker McKenzie in Palo Alto, and Marcela Robledo, partner with Baker McKenzie in San Francisco. It was really fantastic having you both with us today. And as always, many thanks to our audience for listening to this conversation. Stay tuned for the next episode and continue to be safe and stay well.